Blog Talk Radio.
I'm Lauren Leibowitz, and welcome to Blog Talk Radio and How to Be Comfortable in Your Own Shoes. It's a beautiful Thursday, May 6th, and once again, we are coming to you live from Los Angeles, as I do every Thursday at 3 p.m. Pacific Time. And we'd love to hear you. We really would hear from you. We really would. We want you to call. We want to see that switchboard light up. So if you'd like to call in to listen or ask questions, please do so at 347-857-2710. Again, that number is 347-857-2710. We are here live until 3:45 p.m. Pacific time. So we're going to have a blast today because I have a very special guest. And my guest has the ability to make you feel very relaxed and aid you in making your life easier and effortless. He has been a hypnotherapist for over 20 years, solving his patients' personal and business problems from insomnia, procrastination, and much more. So at the snap of his fingers, you are about to get under his healing spell. So please give a nice warm welcome to hypnotherapist Mark Gravel. Hey, Mark.
Hi, Lauren.
How are you?
Well, I'm doing great.
Beautiful. Well, there's the show. That was it. That was pretty good. I don't know how you hypnotized me so fast, but you are.
No, I didn't.
Terrific.
No, I really appreciate your having me on.
Oh, absolutely. I find it fascinating. I'm always interested in seeking alternative ways for people to help themselves.
Mm-hmm.
It's not just it's the whole kind of mind, body, and soul. It's not just a pill.
Right.
To make you feel better or deal with your issues, but there's so many other avenues to explore, and it's fascinating. And I'm glad you're here to share what you do with our listeners. So, why don't we start with defining what hypnosis is?
Well, that's a very good question.
Bingo, got a good one.
No, hypnosis is a very natural state of mind. For instance, and the public has incredible misconceptions of what it really is because of the way it's dealt with in movies, and stage hypnotists actually aren't much help because they give the impression they can hypnotize anybody, and they really can't. If you want, I'll tell you the dirty little secret of stage hypnotists.
Oh, I'd love the dirty little secret, because I wanted to ask you, because I'm sure, like you just said, there is some confusion about what you do, and perhaps what was his name? Ireland, Dr. Ireland,
who was? I'm not sure.
But I know there was Pat Collins. She was the hip.
Oh, Pat Collins. Yeah, she was called the hip hypnotist, but she was a stage hypnotist. She was actually a very good stage hypnotist.
Yes. So was she, in your eyes, legit as a hypnotist or no?
Oh yeah, absolutely. She's very good. But here's the so-called secret. About 20% of the population are what are known as somnambulists. In other words, they're just very naturally deep hypnotic subjects. These are the people who may have a tendency to walk in their sleep. They're actually not in sleep. They're actually in hypnosis. But that's about 20% of the population. So if you had, say, a crowd of, say, 200 people for a stage hypnotist, about 40 of those people are going to be somnambulists. Now, out of those 40 people, the job of the stage hypnotist is to find those somnambulists in the audience. And one of the ways they do that is when they do their initial presentation, they'll make certain body gestures and be observing the audience for who's literally mimicking those gestures. because those people are going to be very suggestible to the hypnotist.
Wow, that's very interesting. I mean, they don't have much time while they're entertaining you on one hand to be able
that's
to
right.
scout.
Well, they also do some tests with people to decide who they're going to eventually use. But it's usually the somnambulists who are basically outgoing, extrovertish types who really like attention drawn to them. So, but once the stage hypnotist has like five or six volunteers, he will always take them backstage out of sight and do what's called deepening them, get them to go even deeper. And he'll give them some suggestions that whenever you hear me say the word sleep, all of you will close your eyes and lean over on each other. And then he'll say, now sleep. And they all do it. And it looks, you know, it looks very impressive. They're actually having fun. They're not asleep at all, but they are in hypnosis and they're having a lot of fun. But the impression he gives is that he can do this with anybody, and he can't. The reason he can't is that, like I said, 20% of the population are very deep hypnotic subjects. And one of the things that makes where I teach hypnotherapy unique is a concept called suggestibility. And so, and suggestibility refers to how we take in verbal communication. Some people take more verbal communication in directly and literally. Now, this is especially true of children. You know how literal they are and how gullible they are.
Right.
Now, so that's about 40% of the population. The other 40% of the population takes more of their information in. We use the term inferentially. It's when you're looking for the meaning behind what's being said. Okay. And up until my mentor established this concept of suggestibility, it was thought that only a small portion of the population could be hypnotized. But it's really not true. So what he came up with is what he calls an inferred arm-raising test. That's the actual process that I use and we teach at the Hypnosis Motivation Institute in Tarzana to hypnotize people, because we use inferences as well as direct and literal suggestions.
Well, because, you know, I think you occasionally come across maybe some people, I don't believe in hypnosis. It never worked
right.
on me.
Right, right. That's a very common thought. But what most people don't actually realize is that in order for a person to get to sleep, you actually have to go through a light stage of hypnosis. All right. So if you got to sleep last night, congratulations, you're a good hypnotist. You hypnotize yourself.
Okay, I'm a professional. Look at that.
I don't know about that, but but that's how people get to sleep. In fact, here's an interesting concept. I do help people with insomnia. And what most people don't realize is there are actually four stages that people go through in order to attain what I'll call unconscious sleep, where you're really not conscious, you're really, you know, really, really asleep, okay? And those four stages are, think about how what happens to us when we go to bed to go to sleep. We lay down and we start thinking. That's the first stage. We think about the events of the day, maybe what's going to happen tomorrow. But what people don't generally realize is that they ultimately move into a second stage, which I describe as a fantasy stage. What characterizes
Hey, that's a whole other show, Mark.
No, wait. I know. Don't go there. Because I'm going to explain it.
Okay.
The fantasy stage is when the thoughts that we're thinking turn to thoughts that are, and this is the key word, associated with relaxation.
Okay.
So somebody may be thinking, oh, you know, it would be nice to go to a walk in this park that they often go to. Or they're walking along a beach. Or something that they associate with relaxation. Okay?
Right.
So that's what characterizes what I'll call the fantasy stage. Actually, that's part of self-hypnosis. Now their muscles are starting to relax. Their mind continues to wander. Okay, And eventually, being in that right stage of hypnosis, it's called the hypnoidal stage. And if you look in any psychiatric textbook under the heading of sleep, you will see the word hypnoidal. Okay? So the person literally has hypnotized himself. Their mind is still wandering. But at some point, they kind of go over the edge to unconscious sleep. But nobody can tell exactly when that occurred, because when you're in a state of hypnosis, we experience two things. One is time distortion. Either time seems to speed up or slow down, and amnesia. So, for instance, nobody could say last night I got to sleep at 11:14 and 17 seconds. We don't fall asleep that way. We drift into sleep.
And so that's the same type of a technique that you use to help people relax. You need to get your patient in a relaxed state, first of all.
No. I actually guide them into this state, okay? I think in the opening you said he'll make you relax. Now, I don't make people relax. I guide them to become relaxed.
Right.
Okay? And basically... the process that I use is I test their suggestibility, which means I ask them some questions, for instance, but I have them answer non-verbally with a head nod yes or a head nod no. Now, what that does, Lauren, is it creates some mental overload from which that client will eventually escape into a state of hypnosis. And when you're in hypnosis, you're not asleep. You have thoughts. I often say to the client, you may have the thought you could walk out of here if you want to. It's a very common thought.
But but physically you couldn't, or could you?
No. Well, no. Yes, you could, if you wanted to. Sure.
But you're just.
Yeah. So you're not out of control at all. See, the people say I can't be hypnotized, typically that's the type of person who has a fear of loss of control.
Exactly. Yeah.
Well, okay.
I think that's why it's and I think the entertainment aspect of it has not helped people in that.
No, it hasn't.
Because I feel that that's what it is.
No, there's so many things that we can help people with using this tool. It's a tool of hypersuggestibility. So, I don't know, you want me to describe the process?
Yeah, I was going to ask you, what would be some of the steps, because for those listeners that do have a fear or are kind of tentative about going on this path.
Right. You're never out of control.
So, is there some kind of process that you go through prior to a patient?
Oh, absolutely, yes. Yeah. I'll give you an example. Everybody procrastinates to some extent, right?
Yeah, you're talking to me. I know.
Yeah.
I have that gene a little bit.
Everybody procrastinates. Okay, so if somebody says, Mark, I've been procrastinating getting my tax figures together and getting all those figures together for my CPA. I missed the deadline. Now I got to get it done by October 15th. But I keep putting it off. How can you help me? Okay?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so here's how. What I'm going to do is I'm going to explain to them what's motivating their behavior from a subconscious level. What's causing them to put it off? Okay?
What would be an example of why people...
Okay, I'm going to tell you. It's actually human nature to procrastinate. It's because we all operate on what is known as a pain-pleasure principle, right? In other words, the way we operate without any conscious awareness is that we seek pleasurable, comfortable things in life, don't we?
Exactly.
And we avoid, that's the key word here, discomforting, drudgery, painful, or fearful things. That's normal, too, to avoid it. All right. So once the client becomes aware, I'm operating on the pain-pleasure principle. So that's what's causing me to avoid getting these taxes done. So basically, I'll explain to the client, well, now I'm gonna state a behavioral definition of procrastination, okay? And that would be, it's avoidance due to some perceived pain, fear, discomfort. Okay? With me so far?
I'm with you.
Okay, all right. So it's normal that you would avoid this because you think of this task as very, very difficult. You may be thinking of it as a mountain of work to do. And it'd be normal to avoid a mountain of work. All right. So here's the, and okay, then the second step is to create a strategy for change. Okay. So what I would suggest to a client like that is I said, so what we have to do here is we have to change your perception of this task. Right now it seems like a mountain to you. So let's change the perception and break up that mountain into little hills that are easily traversed, as you will. That is, that it becomes easier and easier to get done.
Right.
Making sense so far?
So far,
okay,
it's
so,
making sense. I mean, it's basically, well, not basically, but when you, the word perception hit a note with me, because I think that's a key in how we deal with a lot of things in our lives. How
absolutely, sure.
And
right.
And what we're sold from outside of ourselves, from, I don't know, television.
Right.
Everything, it is that perception. The economy is in the toilet, so that's the perception we see.
Yeah. And people can allow that that perception to affect how they're functioning.
That's very true.
You know, I mean, I could say one of my jobs is to help people live a happier life.
but that's true. It's not.
It is true.
It is very true, because I think it sounds so simple, and sometimes the simplest.
Well, sometimes the simplest things are the most effective things.
That's right, but I think maybe some people might feel, wow, perception. I don't see things that way. You know, I don't see life.
Well, we'd have to. That's why we have to discuss it. You know, you discuss it consciously. So what I'm going to suggest to this client is, let's change your perception of this task, okay?
Right.
So here's what we're going to do. Here's the goal. We want you to use a kitchen timer if you have one, or get one if you don't have one. And noting that the hardest part of this whole thing is getting started. It usually is. Okay, so we want you to get started for only 10 minutes. Just get started and use your kitchen timer. Okay, you can do 10 minutes, and of course the client will be, sure, I can do 10 minutes. That's nothing. So use 10 minutes to get your 1099s together, your tax papers together, your return from your CPA. Just assemble the stuff for 10 minutes. And a client will usually agree, yeah, that's doable. And say, then after that, start chipping away at this task in 20-minute intervals. You can do that too, can't you?
Sure.
Yeah. Okay. So in with it, I mean, you have the option to do it maybe for a half an hour and then take a break. But I would suggest don't do it for more than a half an hour. Take a little break. That changes the person's perception of the task. All right.
You sold me.
Yeah. Okay, now the next step is to guide this person into hypnosis and to get them to be very suggestible or receptive to this new strategy.
Now, is that the more challenging aspect of the whole process?
Well, it can be. I've been doing this 20 years. I basically, I can hypnotize anybody who wants to be.
I'm sorry?
Yeah. I can hypnotize anyone who wants to be hypnotized, who wants to experience it. And it's basically just relaxation. It's just relaxation. So, but we also have to understand that it's an escape mechanism. So the way I do it in clinically in my office is I'll get a person, I'll have a person take their left arm and move it from the desk to their chin, right? And I'll usually say, you just did that consciously, didn't you? And they say, yes. And I usually say, in a moment or two, I'm going to help you feel that how that same muscle movement happens, but how it comes actually from a subconscious level. Okay? Now, then I'll test their suggestibility. Now, here's an interesting thing. And you can do this, and your listeners can do this. There are three body changes, or physiological changes, if you will, that people experience as they go into this state of mind that we do call hypnosis. And one of the first ones is the breathing starts to get a little deeper. Okay? And so give me a head nod. I'll say to the client, I'll say exactly this. Now, give me a head nod when you feel your breathing growing deeper or you actually feel the urge to take a slightly deeper breath. So I observe it. They shake their head yes. I said, now I want you to really concentrate on your lips, mouth, and throat, because another one of the body changes is that a person experiences a little dryness in the lips, mouth, and throat. And eventually, like a little dry swallow occurs. Right? And then I'll observe them. And usually that's what occurs. And then the third thing is I have them draw their awareness to their eyes and their eyelids. And I'll say, when you notice movement of the eyes under the eyelids or even a little fluttering sensation in the eyelids, give me a head nod yes. Now, those are the three things. So anybody's got trouble getting to sleep, you do those three things. Just do them consciously. And you'll likely put yourself actually in hypnosis.
It sounds a little bit like getting into some kind of meditative state when people meditate.
That's exactly what it is. Meditation basically is self-hypnosis.
Bingo. There you go. Yeah. Because
it is. That's why people enjoy it.
Yes, because, I guess when people begin a meditation practice, they are looking for the answers within, that we all have all, and only through the quieting the mind can you find.
Right. And quieting the mind, so if you have a person who has insomnia who can't initially get to sleep, what I do is I teach them eventually. Sometimes I even make a recording for them to get to sleep to. I guide them into hypnosis, and then I'll say, now start your mantra, okay? And the mantra usually is concentrating on their breathing, but only on the exhale, repeating a mantra of, on one, peaceful, then restful, and then sleep. And then they repeat that. The goal is to repeat it 21 times. You know what will happen?
It changes.
They won't make it.
Pattern, right?
Yes. Well, it occupies their mind. See, the people who can't get to sleep are the people who can't get out of the thinking stage. They're overthinking.
That's great. But you also this is the perfect elixir, if I may use that, for people to for all kinds of things in their life, whether it's just to help with a challenge that they're experiencing, or to take those 2 minutes to relax and regroup. But you often hear people say, "I don't have time to meditate," which
it actually doesn't take that long.
No,
it really
it doesn't. But starting,
I mean it. Just 10 minutes of self-hypnosis can really recharge you.
Yes, I have heard that a meditation can give you more rest than
right.
than a sleep.
That's because it's I think of it really as hypnosis.
Yes, but that's very interesting. Is how the two are so similar, which is very.
Oh, they are. They are
quieting your mind. Exactly.
Yes.
Exactly.
Right.
Well, that's really exciting. So, and I know you have a psychology background. You studied psychology.
Yes, I do.
In
right.
college. So, and you mentioned your mentor from the institute.
From the institute, right? His
so
name was Dr. John Kappas.
How did you get started doing hypnotherapy? Where did this begin?
Well, it's kind of a story, actually. For most of my life, I've been a professional musician. And I moved to Los Angeles in 1976. And then in 1978, I got my first job with a so-called celebrity. Most of the people that I worked for back then are kind of cruise boat people. It's really true.
Is it really?
Well, yeah, kind of.
It's a different type of celebrity. This is what they do in a certain
right.
Part
so
of their career.
The first one I started working with was Gomer Pyle, Jim Nabors. And I started traveling with Jim. I literally have traveled the world with him. And he's an incredible entertainer. We played every major casino in Las Vegas. Over the years, I probably did between 35 and 40 cruises with him. Which is a great gig because you go on the cruise, you get first class, and you get paid, too.
That's right.
It's
a great
way to do
it. A little mini vacation.
You got it. And from that, I got another account, we call it, and that was with Florence Henderson, Mrs. Brady of the Brady Bunch.
Yes.
And that, so I was traveling with her, and I was not aware of it at the time, but she, in the early 80s, she had gone through a divorce and came to the Hypnosis Motivation Institute to get help. And she met Dr. John Kappas, and he started helping her, but along the way, he also fell in love with her, and he married her.
He put her under his hypnotic state, right?
Well, I think she hypnotized him, quite honestly.
Yes.
Well, there was definitely an attraction there, let's put it that way.
Absolutely.
And so they were married, and I used to call him just John, not Dr. Kappas. I didn't know him as Dr. Kappas. I was traveling all over the country with him, not knowing that he was a pioneer in the field of hypnotherapy. And finally, in 1988, I talked to him about going back to graduate school, because I did have the BA in psychology. So he suggested I go to his school. I enrolled, and I've been there ever since.
Wow, isn't that interesting?
It's been a great
food.
Yeah.
Amazing.
Yeah. Go ahead.
And I was going to say, you mentioned that he was the pioneer of hypnotherapy.
Right.
What made him the pioneer of hypnotherapy?
The concept I explained earlier of suggestibility.
That particular concept.
Well, there's another concept also. It's called sexuality. Basically, sexuality means the person's personality.
I see.
Okay? And what he observed over 30 years of seeing couples is that there are basically two types of personality for each gender, which makes this approach unlike any other approach to relationships. Because most relationship approaches are basically male versus female. But anyone can see that all males aren't alike and all females are alike. Okay, so the actual criteria boils down to how much a person is an extrovert versus an introvert. We all have both of those aspects of our personality. Now, the first person to ever talk about this really was Carl Jung. He was the first one to really describe extrovert versus introvert behavior. But see, you have extrovert males and introvert males. And extrovert females and introvert females. And it's the opposites that actually do attract in relationships. And so he pioneered this concept of sexuality and wrote a book on it called Relationship Strategies, the EMP Attraction. And it's probably one of the most accurate book on the subconscious dynamics of relationships. Because the behavior patterns are extremely predictable. Okay?
Well, this would be a very helpful tool with what I hear that's out there in the dating world from women of all
absolutely, ages. Absolutely.
There's such a
it is very helpful.
In fact,
one of the things that I do, about 60 to 70% of my practice is helping people with relationships.
Starting, like beginning a relationship, you could help somebody with
Sometimes attracting a relationship. That's sometimes. Or improving a relationship, or evaluating it to see if maybe it's not the greatest relationship and maybe it'd be a good idea to let go of it.
Those are all great tools to...
They are. It's an incredible tool. And it's incredibly accurate. So...
And I think the older the... And I can only speak for the female's perspective. The older a woman is seeking a companion, the less time they want to spend looking.
Well, that may be,
Because they are at a certain stage in their life where they don't want to waste time on somebody who's inappropriate. But if they have these tools to...
If they have the evaluation tools.
Exactly.
Okay. See, I am suggesting that knowing how to evaluate other people or the person we're attracted to is, in effect, empowering. Okay, so one of the concepts that I use with people involved in relationships is, the evaluation tool actually is there are 7 defining qualities what I'll call a healthy, satisfying, long-term relationship. You can define them.
All right, hit me with them.
We need mutual like, trust, and respect.
Mm-hmm.
We need good communication.
Mm-hmm.
We actually need good sex.
And you put that third. Why is that?
Well, because that isn't everything. No, I put that actually fifth.
It's actually fifth on your list?
Actually, there's no priority to the list. You have to have them all. Okay,
so
there's
communication.
Well, certainly trust and respect are big deals. Violate trust and or respect, and there's not much hope.
Right.
But, okay, so mutual like, trust, and respect, good communication, good sex, similar interests, but just as important is separate interests.
I don't think many people look at that. They always are looking for what's similar and not what's opposite.
That's true. That's right. And I can tell you why.
Oh, good.
Finally,
an answer.
There is an answer. See, when two people meet and there's an attraction, one of the subconscious, if you will, dynamics of relationships kicks in. And that is that insecurity stimulates libido or sex drive. So if there's a true attraction, there's good chemistry, they're opposite enough, then they start to really get together and they want to be together and be together and be together. And they start to act very much alike. Okay? And so they're both thinking, well, gee, this is great. This person is so much like me. They want bedroom activity just like I do. We're so... like we enjoy the same things. But at some point, once the relationship is established as an exclusive relationship, now we're only available to each other. Then what do you have? You have security.
Right.
And so the libido will start to go down. And from the point where they meet, and it will go down and down and down. And So the person who is the introvert in a relationship will go back to acting like an introvert. Then the extrovert kind of starts to think, well, what happened? Why is this person acting differently now? So, and that's what causes a lot of the problems in relationships, period. And the extrovert will try to get things back to where it was that period is called the honeymoon period. But it won't last forever.
But it's never the same either.
That's true.
It's always different. As your relationship matures, so do you. And then you have all these outside influences that affect your relationship, whether you have children. The age of the couple.
Sure.
And
that's right.
Like any relationship, it takes a considerable amount of work to keep it alive and fresh.
Yeah, I think one of the biggest misconceptions about relationships is, you know, people often think the grass is greener. There's no easy way. It's not easy being single. It's not easy being married. You have to pay attention to it.
Right, but I think what might help them make that process easier is making the best choice.
Well, certainly making the best choice, yes. I mean, you have a lot of different factors. One of the best ways, or, you know, there's other factors as well. For instance, one of the guidelines for dating is that when you date somebody, you know, they're going to treat you rather well, but you really want to observe how they treat other people, especially like service people, like waiters, waitresses, and the guys who park the cars. Because if the person you're with is somehow treats those people not so great, that's how they're eventually going to treat you. That's an important guideline to be aware of.
That's a very good thought. I never thought about that aspect. I always thought that you should meet somebody's friends and see who they are.
Certainly, sure. That's a part of it, too. But I am suggesting that, knowing those seven defining qualities is very important. And here's an example of why it's important. It's actually possible for a person to fall in love with a person, ultimately they find that they don't like.
Really? How does that work?
Well, it often works. It's usually the extrovert in a relationship that can do that. I'll tell you an example about a real client. He was the extrovert. She was the introvert. He wined her and dined her for about, 6 to 8 months or something like that. He literally fell in love with her, okay, until he eventually went by her apartment. And so he was kind of in a bind because he was kind of a neat freak and she had a big sty. And he realized that he could never live with this person. So here he was in love with this person that he suddenly realized he really couldn't live with.
But in the 6 months that
he never had gone by. That's right.
That says something.
Yeah.
That's a flag, I would think. How come?
That is a big flag, sure. Yeah. But I'm just saying that, I'm saying it's possible. I don't know what the frequency of it is, but it is possible to actually fall in love with a person that you ultimately won't like, or that you find out later they're not such a nice person. They treat other people not so nice. So kindness is a very important trait to be looking for.
Exactly. So how long do you think that the honeymoon phase lasts in a relationship?
It depends on the relationship. I have a client. This is an interesting thing. I have a client who had found a boyfriend. They had a 5-year honeymoon. And when the honeymoon was over, I actually helped both of them to get into that next stage, which is known as the plateau stage. But when they first met, and they really clicked, and they got a great chemistry, he told her that he would not marry her for 10 years because he had really gotten burned financially by his first wife. Guess what? She hung in there. They got married like 3 weeks ago.
They've been dating for 10 years?
Well, they've been living together for about 6 years. But after 10 years, he married her.
That's amazing. I don't think I've lasted 10 years. Well, you know,
they have an amazing chemistry.
I guess, like you're saying, it all depends on the relationship.
Yes, it all depends. You have to evaluate each one on its own merits. This is not one size fits all. But the concept in the book Relationship Strategies really, really explains these things. And see, we're attracted to our natural opposite. And stop to think about it, Lauren, just for a moment. If we weren't attracted to our natural opposite, how could the relationship be complementary? See, both people who are opposite bring something different to the relationship.
Of course.
Yeah.
Of course. I mean, that's the yin and yang theory.
It sure is the yin and yang. Yes, exactly. Exactly. I'm basically an introvert. Okay. Maybe 70%. My wife is the extrovert. And so she brings things to the relationship that I don't. And I bring things to the relationship that she doesn't. Okay. I'll give you an example of the importance of separate interests. My wife incidentally, we just celebrated 23 years.
Wow, congratulations.
Yeah, it was pretty good.
That's wonderful.
I think knowing this relationship strategy stuff really,
it really helps.
Both.
So
it really helps. I'm living proof of it.
You personally.
Absolutely. But so for our anniversary one time, she had studied in art school, and she was working in retail. I bought her a really nice easel, and so she started taking art lessons, and the art teacher asked her to take over the class, which she did. So ultimately, she transitioned into basically being a full-time art teacher. All right. By that time, I'm practicing hypnotherapy. And one day she said, Mark, why don't you do a canvas? And to me, that was a red flag because that's her territory. I want to stay out of her territory. So I have photography. I have gardening. I have fly fishing. Okay. So I, you know, thanked her, but I said no thanks.
Well, you just didn't want to get into her territory, even though.
Absolutely, no. That's her thing.
Yeah.
She is the artist. She's wonderful with color, and sometimes Sometimes she asks me, "Well, what do you think of this color for one of the bedrooms?" I say, "You are the artist. I trust you."
Yeah. Well, this is so fascinating, and I know we could go on and on forever.
Yes. Yes.
And I'm sorry we didn't get to so many other things. Your show that's on
I actually have a TV show.
It's Motivation, but I just want to give out your website so that people
before
we go off air that people can find out all this information about you, about your show.
Okay.
Called Mark's Book Club Show on the Hypnosis Motivation Institute, the Mental Bank Program. And they can go to your website.
That's another one. Right.
That's another one. There's two. There's two. So your website is...
The website is hypnosis.edu.
Okay. So people can contact you at that website
They can do that or... And once you get on that site, there'll be a place to click that says HMI Web TV. And if you scroll down after the screen comes up, there's a schedule of when those shows are.
Okay.
Mine is called the Book Club.
the book club. Okay.
Right. Or they can go to my website, which is Mark Gravel, MarkGravelle, as in Victor, ELLE.com.
Great, Mark. Thank you so much.
You're very welcome. Thank you for having me, Lauren.
It was so great. We're not on air now, but it was just fascinating. Yeah. I mean, I truly find it fascinating, and hopefully you can come on again and we can talk about
sure, you can talk about a lot of different things.
Yes, absolutely. And you've helped me with
you know what's interesting?
What's that?
I do phone sessions and Skype sessions with people literally now all over the world. I did a Skype session with a guy in Israel recently.
Did you really?
Yep.
But I that's not surprising because...
No, it isn't because you know and I know it's hard to find good people in their field.
True.
Okay. I mean, Joel is really good at what he does. And
yes,
quite honestly,
he is.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's hard to find good people in the field. There's one book called Happiness is a Serious Problem.
great title.
It is a great title. I use the concept in that book with literally every client.
Now, what is the book that you use for your book club, your show?
I do a different book every week.
Oh, every week. I see. Oh.
Yeah, I started out with Happiness is a Serious Problem. And see, and basically the idea of the show, Lauren, is that I describe some of the concepts in a self-help book. But ultimately, the way I use them is to be able to explain the concepts to clients that will help them, but then additionally, in effect, condense it down into some suggestions that I'm going to give that person in hypnosis.
Wow. It's amazing. I've learned so much more about hypnosis. And
Yeah. If people really misconceive it.
I think so. What other things do you help people with? What other concerns?
Oh my goodness. Well, you know, procrastination, insomnia, actually, business success. That's what that mental bank class is about.
Oh, okay.
Okay. And there's a process you can use where you basically it's a journaling process that you do at night, and to increase a person's what I'll call a subconscious script of what they're willing to accept out of life. Some people have high scripts, some people have low scripts. A lot of people will be successful, but their script... Oh, here's something really interesting. Again, most people are not aware that up to 40% of the people who win a lot of money in a lottery end up in bankruptcy.
I believe that.
Because...
What's your theory?
Well, the theory is that their subconscious script couldn't handle that much money, and they literally got rid of the money.
That's interesting.
It doesn't make any rational sense, but the subconscious is not rational.
But don't you see that people have money? Money attracts money because it's the way...
That's true. I agree.
It's your perception of money.
That's true. And some people just can't hold on to it. They have to spend it.
Wow, that's amazing. So
yeah.
So the success is not an accident. Is that the business success?
That's the one, yeah. That's what that deals with.
Oh, okay. Do you past life? I don't want to say past life, but...
Yeah, well, you know something? I can.
You can.
I can. I don't prefer to.
You don't?
Because... I mean, that depends upon the person's belief system. If that's well entrenched in their belief system, okay. But I prefer to deal with this one.
Well, I only ask because I'm curious as to
right.
things that happen in our lives.
Yeah.
Horrible things. You know, like, let's take people who are abducted and are
right.
returned, and what that experience does to their psyche, and how
that's true.
they move forward in their life, you hope that they go through some kind of therapy. But
well, yeah, and if past life is part of their belief system, then you can use it to help them.
Right, and to change those belief systems. That's what I guess I wanted to also talk to you about is that
right.
I have been told that as when we're born, we're born with a certain set of beliefs because we're born into a family, and they have their own set of beliefs, your parents. And so
yeah.
as you grow, you learn a certain set of beliefs.
Right, right.
Only up until you're ready to say, you know, I don't believe in that particular belief. I don't buy that anymore. Can you change it?
Right. So, yeah, you can. You can change.
I know. I feel healed already.
I think you're doing great. This is a great thing you're doing here.
Oh, it's a lot of fun. I get to talk to a lot of interesting people and learn.
Yeah.
You know, it's all about how to be comfortable in your own shoes, basically, is how to be happy with yourself. And living in Los Angeles, unfortunately, I can now see so many people who are so unhappy and what they do to try to be happy, which, you know, a facelift, you know, they just don't like themselves. And it's about starting with that, how to like yourself and realize there's so much.
Absolutely, sure.
Yeah, there's so much out there. Now, if you can't sleep, they go to somebody like you or you're having a relationship. I like myself. So what are the
right.
tools I can use to find the best mate for me?
Right.
And that's where someone like you comes in because
that's right.
people
that's
can
right.
see things clearly.
Yeah. See, you know, people who are seeking a relationship often don't realize that through their subconscious behavior, which would be their body language and their kind of attitude, they don't project out availability.
Right, exactly.
See, if you're not projecting out that you're available, you're not going to attract anyone.
It's very true. It's very true.
Yeah.
I always tell people it's very easy to meet people. You just have to be open.
Absolutely.
That's part of it, and then you can discern whether I don't care for that kind of person or no
right
or that or there's somebody right. that might be interesting or whatnot. So
one of the things I actually do is I consult with some people about their dating profile. Because the introverts of the world often come off much more extrovertish than they really are. So they're not going to attract that natural opposite.
That's very interesting. I would never, I might have to now spread the word about you because I would never, that's a very good,
yeah.
That's a really good niche, like a little.
It sure is.
It
yeah.
is.
I tell you what, go to my site, click on articles, and you'll see an article entitled Dating with Detachment.
Okay.
I think you'll find it quite interesting.
I found your Happiness versus Perfection very interesting.
Good.
I wanted to talk about that. But so I'll go to hypnosis.edu?
No, go to markgravel.com.
Oh, the Mark Gravel site? Okay.
Yeah.
Where can I find the Success is Not an Accident? Is that the Mark Gravel site too?
Well, I'll give you the direct site for that.
Oh, okay.
Okay, you can go to hypnosis.edu and find it. But the direct site is mymentalbank.com.
Okay. All right. All right, great. Well, Mark, thank you. This was so lovely, and I'm one of these days I'm going to come hear you play that beautiful bass of yours.
Yeah, at the Beverly Hills Hotel. I'll be there Sunday.
Yeah.
It's Mother's Day. Don't come Sunday.
I know,
it's
going to be crazy. No, not this
Sunday. It'll be nuts, yeah.
Not this Sunday. But I want
right.
to again thank you so much, Mark, for taking time to be on the show. It was a lot of fun.
You're welcome. Okay, listen, which one here is your actual website?
My website or the email address?
No, the website.
Oh, it's Blog Talk Radio.
Oh, that. Okay. Got it.
And you can put a link of the show on your website.
Right.
if you want people.
I will.
Yeah, you can do
absolutely.
That. Yeah, so people can, you know, get some more information about you.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'll even put it in the newsletter.
Yeah,
and that'll go out to a whole bunch of people with your name on it.
Oh, that would be lovely. I appreciate that.
How about that?
Love it.
Well,
love
yeah,
it.
I mean, you know, I got a philosophy. The only reason I'm not busier, I'm getting to the point where I'm busy enough, but is because the right people don't know about me.
That's right. Well, yeah, and that's right. You've got to constantly tell people, you know, what you do.
Absolutely, yeah.
Absolutely. And I don't know if you are familiar with teleconferencing, are you?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because
that's a good way to do it, too.
Yeah,
I know.
Can you do more than one person at a time?
Well, I wouldn't want to, actually.
Actually, I see. Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
So,
well, I'll definitely give the update to Joel so he can
okay.
Yeah. Out the word. Yeah, definitely. Definitely.
Okay. I really appreciate it, Lauren.
Yeah, thank you. It was wonderful.
Okay.
All right.
I'll be in touch.
Okay.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Bye.